The following program is brought to you by Winthrop University Hospital. It's the weekend. Be good to yourself. It's Katz's Corner with Dr. Aaron Katz and Dr. Philippa Cheatham, where you can get simple, straightforward answers to your questions about health, from diet and supplements to lifestyle changes. To reach Dr. Katz and Dr. Cheatham, call 800-848-WABC. Now, live on 77 WABC, the chairman of urology at Winthrop University Hospital in New York, with co-host Philippa Cheatham, attending in urology at Winthrop University Hospital, here is Dr. Aaron Katz.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome again to another live round of Katz's Corner here on WABC Radio in New York. I'm your host, Dr. Aaron Katz, and we're live at 1-800-848-WABC. That's right. Give us a call if you'd like. We have a wonderful show for you today at 1-800-848-9222. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Katz's Corner on what is, again, Philippa, another chilly Sunday afternoon. Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Really excited
because got...
we have a show that is finally above the belt.
Above the belt, yes. We'll be talking about heart health today, and we have one of Winthrop's greatest cardiologists here to talk to us about his center and what he's doing out there at Winthrop. We want to welcome everyone today. Philippa is you're geared up. You have about 10 pages of notes there, which. Which is amazing because it's only a half an hour show, you know.
I know. I know. But
you've got like 5 hours of lectures notes there.
You love it. You love the girly prep that goes on.
I do. I do. And thankfully, you've got a lot of information about our guest and what we'll be talking about this morning. But
you know what normally happens.
What happens?
Normally at 6:59, you go, "What are we talking about today?"
That's not true.
And you love to glance. I often see you taking a sneaky little peek at my notes.
I do. I certainly do. And I thank you for doing all those notes and all the research and checking up on all the studies, Philippa. You know, we are continuing our prostate cancer educational series at Winthrop, the second Wednesday of every month, right? And it's at 6:30 to 7:30 at the Winthrop Wellness Pavilion. That's at 1300 Franklin Avenue in the lovely Garden City. And this week, Philippa, we'll be talking about bone health and the importance of movement. And our speakers will be from the outpatient rehab services at Winthrop, talking, of course, we refer to this a lot about the importance of bone health, especially in those patients with malignancy like prostate cancer. So
that's right. I've actually been telling patients about this, and particularly those patients who are on hormone therapy for prostate cancer. We know that that can affect bone health, and many patients have shown a huge amount of interest and great feedback actually on the prostate cancer support group that we run. So 516-663-2316 is the telephone number. For more information, that's 516-663-2316. And, of course, you can register online at prostatecancersupport@winthrop.org. Remember, guys, there's only one R in prostate.
Oh, please. People know that,
they
Philippa.
Don't. I can tell you they do.
Oh, they do, too. They Google it.
I saw a gentleman on Friday.
Everyone Googles everything now,
I saw a gentleman on Friday who had been diagnosed nearly 20 years ago, and he came in and said, "How's my prostrate, doc?"
Well, you didn't ask him to spell it.
I didn't need to. I heard the two R's. Anyway, moving swiftly on.
All right, let's move on. It's already 7:05, so let's bring in our guest. He's live in the studio with us, and we really appreciate him coming in this morning. His name is Dr. Hari Naidu, and he runs the Center for Excellence at Winthrop in cardiology. He's a unique guy, Philippa. You know, he trained at Cornell and then went to University of Pennsylvania for fellowship, went back to Cornell as an attending, and now is an associate professor at Stony Brook and runs the cardiac cath lab at Winthrop. And he has a special interest in a condition. I know you've done a lot of research because I see your notes over there. I didn't know much about this condition, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. This is the condition, Philippa, where men I guess, and women as well. Is that right? Women get this too?
That's right.
Yeah. You know, you hear about the athletes, you know, that all of a sudden they had a sudden, either we think they had a heart attack, and they had sudden death. And of course, we don't want to scare anyone, but there are certain signs and symptoms of this condition. And we'll talk about heart health and, of course, how it affects all the rest of the body. Good morning, Hari. Thank you so much for coming in, Dr. Naidu. How are you this morning?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Great. So tell us a little bit about, you know, things that you do at Winthrop that are unique. We were talking a little bit before you came on into the studio about this this condition, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. What's all that about?
So this is a disease that I got involved in sort of on the side. It's something that most people didn't know about, and I was fascinated by it. One of the problems we have is that there are some diseases that really affect a lot of people, and it's really people aren't aware about it. Where it comes to fruition really is these kids who die suddenly, and we all know about that, and that's traumatic, and we hear about it, and we wonder what can we do about it. The biggest thing, and the reason why I'm here today, is to raise awareness about it. The disease, you know, and most people live a normal life. I don't want to scare people either. Most people, you know, we hear about it as people who can die suddenly, but the reality is that most of these people live a normal life. But the problem is, they are at risk for a large part of that life, if not aware.
And we hear so much now about cardiovascular disease, heart disease, but when we hear about cardiac disease, I mean, most of what we're hearing on the media and about all these risk factors that are associated with heart disease, like smoking, diabetes, high blood pressure, that's usually related to the blood vessels, isn't it, that
Correct.
Supply the heart. And yet today we're talking more about the heart muscle.
Right. So, you know, I had a patient in the office the other day who said, you know, do I have heart disease? I have this hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. Is it heart disease? I'll say, yeah, it is a type of heart disease, but it's not, you know, when most people think about heart disease, they think about coronary disease, the arteries where they block up and you get a heart attack. Patients with this disease don't get a heart attack. I mean, you can if you get older and you may have two problems, but this problem usually causes two things. One is it can cause sudden death, which we try very hard to prevent, even though that rate overall is still only about 1% per year. But the second thing is it can cause a form of heart failure later in life. So a lot of these patients, as they get older, especially if they didn't know about this, that they had it, they start getting more short of breath or more fatigued. And that's where oftentimes I come in.
Actually, a very good friend of mine who's a urologist, he has this condition. And it's actually inherited, isn't it?
It is. And that's also a very difficult thing for people to realize because it's a very unique disease that can be hidden for many years. So a lot of people don't realize it's in their family. And then you ask them, did anybody die suddenly in your family? Did anybody die young? Oh, yeah, somebody died. We thought it was a heart attack, like you said. But reality is that now we know more about it. Once you start doing autopsies, you start tracing them around, genetically even now, we can tell that often it's following a particular family strain.
So you can have this disease, you say it's genetic, right? And so you can be in your 20s and 30s and be fine and have no symptoms, and it can present later in life, this thickening of the heart muscle?
Correct.
Is that right?
Yeah,
this guy you were telling us about, you saw in the office, I mean, how old was he?
He's about 45, 50.
So he's all of a sudden, he's, you know, he has his genetic thing, and his heart muscle has been thickened his whole life, and now he's just presenting with symptoms, or does the thickening come on later in life?
Both. So it's very hard to know at a moment whether it was something that came on very sudden or something that's been there for a while. There are some clues. They may have been short of breath for a while and misdiagnosed. Maybe someone said they have chronic bronchitis, which is a lung disease of smokers, but they never really smoked. Or maybe they say they have, somebody told them they have asthma, but reality is that they don't have any asthma testing that shows that. Oftentimes, it ends up being real heart disease that was just misdiagnosed and not diagnosed. So they may have had the thickening all their life, or it may have just gradually come, and by the time you see them, is that's when it's gotten thick enough that it's now caused symptoms enough for them to say, wait, something is really out of proportion to what I think. I'm not that overweight. I'm not that out of shape. Why am I more short of breath now?
You know, one thing I remember from medical school is that when they were talking to us about this condition, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, we were always taught that it was the number one cardiac killer for, you know, famous football players or basketball players or baseball players. And I was looking at a number of people that have actually had this condition. In fact, the famous, the Canadian actor Corey Haim, he had this condition and died of it, actually, in the, I think he died in 2010. And also the basketball player Coutinho Mobley announced his retirement due to this condition. Is there a link with sport, or why is it these guys have it?
Yeah, so here's the deal. There's no link with sports. And I joke to my patients that, you know, you could have this and have a problem being a chess player. A famous chess player could have this, right? An actor, for example. The reason that it's linked to sports is that it seems that the stress or the level of excitement that comes along with sports, which raises the adrenaline level,
right,
that tends to be a trigger, we think, for the arrhythmias or the electrical activity problems that cause patients to die with this. So the reason you hear about it in sports is because those are the people with the disease that are more at risk, whereas the people who end up, you know, doing other things with their life, not sports, have not pushed their bodies to the point that they would, that their heart would actually suffer from this. And so one of the messages here for me is that it is a disease of everybody. It's a disease of all ethnicities, all races, both genders. So I see both. But what we see in the news is the ones who die suddenly, and there's a disproportionate number of young males.
And I assume it's treatable and curable and correctable. I mean, so you see these patients, men. Is it mostly men or is
actually even men and women. Even a little bit more men.
So you see these patients, and they were initially maybe short of breath. Maybe they thought they had asthma or a lung condition. Next thing you know, you're diagnosing this condition in their heart.
Correct. Yeah.
And by the way, if you're just tuning in to Cats's Corner, we're talking with Hari Naidu. And Dr. Naidu is he runs the cardiac cath lab and runs the Center of Excellence. I wasn't really aware of this. I don't know. Were you, Philippa? This the Center of Excellence for Hypertrophic Cardiomyopathy at Winthrop.
No, I wasn't. And that's the great thing about the show. We meet all sorts of people that we probably
wouldn't
otherwise normally meet.
You're right. And so is this the only Center of Excellence around in the area for this condition?
It's the only one on Long Island. There's only about 15 to 20 in the United States. And certainly I think we're probably the top five or six in terms of the total number of patients. We have about 400 patients.
So do they need the muscle in the heart removed? I mean, is this a surgical correctability thing? I mean,
well,
is this something that you're going to have to undergo surgery here?
It can be. So the problem with this disease as you get older is that the heart muscle gets more and more enlarged. And when the enlargement happens, it's not outwardly. It's actually it's inwards. So it actually takes over some of the room inside the heart. And that's a problem because that means that the blood can't circulate through the heart as easily as it should. And oftentimes it can get obstructed, meaning that the blood comes in, but the muscle is in the way of the blood leaving. So most patients can be treated with medication. So once I see them over a few months and I give them more medications, and oftentimes they feel dramatically better. And they're very pleased that somebody finally made the right diagnosis and somebody finally knew the way to manipulate the medications and their lifestyle to make them safer, live longer, and live better. But some patients, about 5 to 10% of them, end up continuing to have shortness of breath, a lot of fatigue, even sometimes congestion and swelling, so fluid built up in the body. And sometimes patients are passing out a lot. These patients are the ones that oftentimes, despite the medications, may need surgery.
Do you think that patients who are doing lots of, there's more and more people doing marathons, and my brother's a triathlete, and my sister-in-law, I mean, are these people who are doing strenuous exercise, long distance running, and these extreme sports, do you think these people should be screened for the disease or not?
Now, that's an excellent question. In this country, we have not done a systematic screening of all athletes. There are countries that do. Italy is a prime example that does screen all athletes.
I saw that, yeah.
At a certain level, they get EKGs and they get a health screening. My personal preference is that if you're going to do significant athletics that are linked to this kind of strenuous activity, you probably should at least get an EKG, which is an electrocardiogram, which is where they put the leads on your chest and they run a piece of paper to get those the electrocardiogram. Because at least you'll pick up a large number of these patients. Usually the EKG is abnormal, probably in 80 to 90% of patients with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. The problem is it doesn't pick up everything, but it picks up at least as a good screen. And in the meantime, you can also ask those people, do you ever get dizzy? Do you ever get short of breath? Do you ever feel palpitations? Anything unique that may be out of the ordinary for them. Those are the patients that should probably then proceed to an ultrasound of the heart to make sure that they don't have this.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the American Heart Association has opposed screening for this condition.
Yes.
Is that correct?
And the reason why they have opposed it is because of the same reason they opposed screening.
Well, Philippa did a homework, didn't she?
Yeah, no, it's
she
great.
Really did. You know?
The reason they oppose it is really because
I knew nothing about this, you know, when I came in. And Philippa, she's got five pages of notes there, you know, and she's unbelievable.
I'm going to get a gold star at the end of the show.
What about the Olympics? Are you watching the Olympics at all? I mean, because I'm watching these young kids and I'm thinking, you know, we have 230 American athletes. You watching the Olympics, Philippa?
A little bit, yeah. I see Vladimir Putin's looking pretty miserable at the moment every time they shoot.
Why? Because of the the stars, the snowflakes.
I think the snowflakes.
One snowflake
failed. And also they've had a huge amount of criticism about the accommodation for the athletes as well.
Yeah, that's right. True. But, you know, they're quick to put it down. I think it's a wonderful event. I really do. And I love watching the young kids. Just thinking about, you know, our athletes, because they're under extreme pressure and at altitudes. And, you know, last night I was watching the snowboarding, which was phenomenal. But, you know,
my guess is that they're all
getting
screened.
Should those be screened?
Well, my guess is they all are getting screened.
With what? What are they screened? Just an EKG?
I'm guessing they're probably getting ultrasounds.
Ultrasound?
I bet you they are. That level of competition, I think they're probably getting screened. But I this is just conjecture on my part.
Let me ask you something, just to change gears, not change gears, but testosterone. I see this gentleman on the phone. Maybe we can bring him on in a sec. Okay, actually, we could bring him on now. He has a question. Arthur. Good morning, Arthur. How are you? Aaron, you want to bring him on? Arthur? Arthur, is he there? Good morning, Arthur. How are you? Arthur, are you there? Okay. Okay, probably hung up. Well, his question was, and I'll get to it, was testosterone replacement. Because a lot of our guys, you know, are interested in replacing T. This is a big thing that's going on,
right,
obviously.
Big deal right now.
Do you see many men that... And there was a big JAMA article, because we talked about this, Philip and I, about the men that have pre-existing coronary artery disease.
Right.
Not what you're talking about, not the hypertrophic, you know, muscle, but coronary artery disease, and then take testosterone, are at higher risk of a stroke and a subsequent MI.
Right.
Have you had any experience with testosterone replacement?
So I have a lot of experience with patients who have come to me on it. I have not myself prescribed it because I think I was concerned that there wasn't as much evidence yet. That being said, patients oftentimes felt so much better on the testosterone supplementation. I am familiar with the article. The article was a little concerning that there was about a 30-40% increase in the rates of those events. So I guess in medicine, typically we want to wait for, you know, confirmatory studies. So there probably will be other studies.
But if you saw somebody that had this condition, would you say not to take testosterone?
This condition?
Yes. Yeah.
I think there's no data for this condition. But in general, I'd probably say it's probably not a good idea. Anything that's going to stress the heart more or make the heart maybe even more enlarged is not a good idea.
I see.
I have two questions. I mean, they say that February is National Heart Month. I'm not sure if that's because it's Valentine's Day next week. But two questions I have for you. I keep hearing about these biomarkers, about, you know, these calcium tests that predicts for potentially calcification, and that seems to be the new buzz thing, certainly for those outside of cardiology. Is there a value in that? And my second question is, we talk a lot on Katz's Corner about supplements for prostate health.
Mm-hmm.
What about supplements for cardiac health? I was reading about vitamin E, vitamin C, niacin. Should you take a fish oil? Should you not take a fish oil?
Oh, the fish oil. Let's talk about the fish oil.
Sure.
What about the first one? Because
calcium screening.
That comes up quite a bit, that calcium score. Yeah.
Right. Calcium score is very good, actually. The problem with calcium score is that
is that a blood test?
No, it's actually, you do
a CAT scan.
Yeah. So there's only two problems with it. One is that it's a CAT scan, which is a significant amount of radiation. Okay. The second thing is that calcium score is very good if it's zero, meaning if your score is zero, then your risk overall over 5 to 10 years is extremely low. But if it's higher, then you start having to say, well, is it higher than what would be expected for your age or not? So I tend to use it in patients who you want to confirm that their risk is very low. So they tend to be younger or low-risk people that you want to confirm. Maybe they have a family history, but you want to see if their risk is very, very low.
And for the risk factors for cardiac disease, if you had to pick one risk factor that increases your calcium score, is it genetics? Is it smoking? Is it diabetes? Is it high cholesterol?
I would say it's probably genetics, number one.
Really?
I think we don't talk about it as much because we can't do anything about it, but I would tell the audience that genetics is still the number one thing. It's a black box that if you have a lot of people in your family that have heart disease, chances are it's an uphill battle for you for the rest of your life. Apart from that, diabetes, smoking are probably the two big ones that that raise your risk of heart disease.
Are there any recommendations if you have multiple people in your family that have cardiac disease and at a specific age, should you just get the CAT scan and get a calcium score?
There are no recommendations that tell you that has to be done.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'll tell you in my practice, if they come in and they have multiple family members that I'm concerned, I typically will do probably more testing than I do in other patients.
If your father had had heart attack, what would you do for yourself?
If my father had a heart attack, I would take a good look at all the risk factors that I have, which includes also eating healthier, keeping your BMI, your body weight, ideal, Obviously not smoking or stopping smoking, preventing diabetes, and trying to stay active. I think that's the best we can do. Now, if on top of that you find, despite all that, your cholesterol levels are out of whack, then oftentimes you have to add medications to really push that down.
And I know Friday was Go Red Day to raise awareness for heart disease among women, which I think is still the number one killer for women. You know, we hear so much about breast cancer, but I think heart disease is still the number one killer.
Absolutely.
If your mother has heart disease, is that more of a risk factor to you than if your father has heart disease, or is that not known?
I think that's not known, but since you get half from each, probably about the same. But I will say it is true that in women, it is the number one cause of death. And as you get older, there are more women dying of heart disease than men dying of heart disease.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Dr. Harry Naidu is our guest this morning here on Katz's Corner. He runs the cardiac cath lab at Winthrop University Hospital. He's been there for 8 years, a wonderful guy. He probably has the most patients in the area. He told me earlier he has over 400 patients that he's following with this condition of hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And he has, well, if you're interested in seeing him for consultation, you should give him a call at 516-663-9696. That number again is 516-663-9696. And let me just go back to Philip's question about the fish oils. What's your take on that?
So fish oils, I think there's something really there. I think for fish oils in particular, we know that it has a number of effects, partly on cholesterol profile, but also it tends to be a blood thinner too. The surgeons have figured this out.
Oh, yeah.
That's how we figured it out, is that the surgeons say that these patients tend to bleed more, and we realize that. So the thing I would tell people is that fish oil is probably fine. What I would say, though, is that if you're on other blood thinners like Coumadin or aspirin or Plavix, you should be particularly careful because it does increase the risk of bleeding, we feel. So I typically will take it off on patients who have had stents, for example, because they're on medications that increase the thinning of the blood. But other than that, I think fish oil is fine. In terms of the other vitamins, there have actually been studies that have shown no benefit. So vitamin E in particular, some of the B vitamins, there have been studies as part of larger randomized trials, big trials, 10,000-15,000 patients that have really shown no benefit. So some of these, you know, nutraceuticals or vitamins may have a benefit, but the ones that we've been testing.
What about CoQ10? That comes up.
CoQ10 has not been studied, to my knowledge, in a major trial. I allow it in patients who have had side effects of
allow it. That's politically correct.
That's true. I don't.
Okay.
Recommending means I prescribe it, and I don't actually actively prescribe it.
Well, let's say somebody has all these risk factors that Philip had just asked, all this laundry list. I mean, why not take a fish oil? Why not take a CoQ10? Why not take a red yeast rice? In addition to all of the things that you're recommending,
right? I do recommend the fish oil. The other ones, if it comes up in the conversation, some patients are interested in alternative ways. And the way I see it is if the risk is high enough for me to be concerned, I typically move to the statin medications. If it's borderline or lower, I focus on the risk factors really hard.
Yeah. But a lot of those statins, don't they reduce these supplements? Haven't been shown that they can reduce CoQ10 levels? And if you're on like the Lipitor at higher doses at 40 a day or something like that, maybe take a CoQ10?
Correct. So if you're having symptoms, so it has, in my experience, patients who have the high-dose statins and have cramps or other symptoms, they will say that they feel better with the CoQ10. So that is something that I will tell them about if they do have those symptoms. If they don't have the symptoms, then I say hold off.
I was even reading that melatonin has been shown in some studies to reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. And hear so much about melatonin, the pros and cons. Is there any benefit to having melatonin?
Not in large cardiology trials. And so, my take on all of these is that unless I have good evidence that it's beneficial and not harmful. So one of the problems is that oftentimes we don't know if something is harmful. The testosterone example is one of them. And I get very concerned that when you're dealing with real disease, then you have to be very careful about that.
Yeah, but there's been a lot of studies, with the fish oils.
Correct.
And CoQ10.
I think fish oil, I think, is a difference.
I think what you're saying is you can take it. We don't know the true benefit. It probably won't hurt you,
Correct.
Though. And it could help you.
Correct.
And even though the large studies haven't maybe panned out individually, we don't know how it may help you, and especially if you're at a higher risk.
Right. Well, that's the beauty. The trials are helpful because the vitamin E and these other supplements, they didn't hurt you at all. So I don't want to make people feel that they should be stopping those vitamins.
I think there was one trial with very high dose vitamin E, though, that was not beneficial. If you went over 800 and you had pre-existing cardiac disease, I forget the name of that trial, but there was some risk there.
And there's absolutely no doubt that for fish oils and prostate cancer, although there was a study that came out last year, that was a very flawed study. I mean, we recommend fish oils for prostate cancer prevention, and that study that came out that was flawed caused a huge amount of stress and anxiety for patients, thinking, oh my goodness, I'm on a fish oil. This study suggests that it can aggravate your risk of getting prostate cancer, but that's certainly not being borne out in the proper
trials. That came out about a year ago, right?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. Well, all right, you've been a terrific guest. I want to thank you so much for coming in. Again, our wonderful guest this morning, Dr. Hari Naidu, who runs the Center of Excellence for Hypertrophic Cardiomyopathy at Winthrop. He is a terrific guy, as you've heard, and his number is 516-663-9696. And you're clinically active. I mean, you see these patients every day, I assume, right?
I see patients 3 days a week, and I'm also in the lab doing procedures the other days.
The cardiac lab.
Correct.
Yeah, and those are for patients that need or having symptoms, a chest pain or things like that?
I mean, I do all types of procedures in the lab. I put stents in for patients who have blockages. We also close holes in the heart. Some patients are born with holes in the heart that need fixing. And then, of course, for this procedure, there's an alternative to surgery called alcohol ablation, which is something that we do.
Wow. And so you do alcohol ablation, and then you're starting a new program you were telling me about, this mitral clip.
Correct.
Where people have mitral valve. Just tell us about that in the last 30
seconds.
Yeah,
cardiology is really fascinating now because there's so much we can do with minimally invasively when patients are oftentimes awake, alert, and so the risks overall are lower. There are diseases of the heart that can affect the valves. So the valves are the doors in the heart, and sometimes the doors can get leaky, sometimes they can get tight, and the bottom line is they make the heart very inefficient. One valve called the mitral valve is a very important valve that oftentimes gets leaky. When that gets leaky, people get into really bad heart failure where they really can't get out of bed or they can't walk that far. Many of these patients are older and they can't get surgery or they're poor risk for surgery, so there is a technique called the MitraClip, which is a way of tethering these two valve leaflets together, the two doors together, so that they don't leak quite so much. And so we're starting that in the next month at Winthrop.
Now, I apologize in advance if you get a question from a girlfriend of mine, but apparently she was telling me that the condition we were talking about this morning, hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, apparently it's the number one killer of heart disease in cats. I don't know.
That is true.
Is that true?
Absolutely.
If you have a cat, should you ask your vet to check them out for?
We're getting out of my league now, but my guess is most of the vets do check the cats for, because it is by far the number one killer.
Well, when you said cats, I was hoping it's not Aaron cats. I mean, you know.
Oh, I see.
That's right. Well, you have to check your family history.
Well, if you want to link cardiology with urology, Aaron, there was a 42-year-old gorilla in Melbourne Zoo who was actually the father of the first gorilla born by artificial insemination who died unexpectedly of this condition. Apparently, hokum, this hypertrophic cardiomyopathy is apparently not that uncommon in male gorillas. So there you are.
Correct.
Did you know that?
Well, now we're back to Dr. Katz.
All right, everyone. Well, again, I wanted just to remind everyone again about our prostate cancer support group that we have. If you missed it earlier on, right, Filippo, it's going to be this Wednesday night. And we'll be talking about bone health. We have two wonderful speakers from the physical therapy department at Winthrop that will be talking about bone health and the importance of movement. That'll be at 6:30 to 7:30 at 1300 Franklin Avenue in Garden City.
That's right. If you want more information, call 516-663-2316 for the prostate cancer support or register online.
It's actually not online. They just have to email.
Oh, okay.
Email.
Email
at, what was the email address?
prostatecancersupport@winthrop.org.
There you go. All right, everyone.
Happy Valentine's Day for next week, guys.
Happy Valentine's Day. Thank you very much, Dr. Naidu. You were a terrific guest.
Fabulous.
Really. And we'll have you back on talking more about heart health at Winthrop. Tune in every Sunday. This is Dr. Aaron Katz.